Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice. We also have Dr. Kim Hayes. We welcome you to the show. Today is Monday, October the 20th, 2014, and our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and we're honored that everybody who chooses to join us does do that each day that you do. And the beginning of a new week, we're in chilly, rainy Lansing, Michigan. It's actually been pretty nice. The temperature's been up in the 50s during the day and getting down to frost at night, but not real serious cold. So that's pretty cool. Pretty warm. It's nice. In any event, we just made our transition from Grand Rapids, Michigan, where we spoke all last week, to our Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Workshop. Got out of there about 6 o'clock and hit the road for Lansing. Spent the night at Rex and Mitzi's, where we're their guests for the week. And did our first workshop at Renaissance Unity yesterday. Had a really awesome energy, great crowd for Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Tonight we're going to step into Empowered to Heal, and some of the other workshops we're doing this week will be Getting the Stress You Need, Laws of Living. We'll be doing a variety of workshops each evening. So if you're in the Lansing, Michigan area, then we'd be delighted to see you 7 to 9:30 at Renaissance Unity. Free workshops tonight, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Saturday, there is one paid workshop that we do, and that's called Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. And so we'll do that one on Saturday. Anybody who's interested in joining us and taking your work to the next level, we'd be delighted to have you. And today is Monday, so that makes it Parent Teacher Talk Monday. And I had a thought of speaking a little bit about the roots of resentment and rage in our culture, and especially with children. And recognizing that when we come into the world, as you ask the question, describe the newborn is described as this awesome presence of active love. Lots of different words are used, but that's the bottom line of everybody's descriptor of the newborn child. And we all started out precisely the same way. How do we end up in a world with so much rage and so much guilt, murder, shame? You know, how did this happen? What is going on that we have so much insanity and so little of the presence of love? Where did it go? What happened to it? Well, if you've been to our codependence to interdependence workshop, you know what happens to the child. And we bring this up particularly today to just give parents some information about this dynamic that ends up usually with the parent being filled with lots of frustrations and hostilities and rage and guilt and grief and pain, and not really recognizing how those energies are passed on to the children. They wonder why their children express those kinds of energies. What's wrong with them? They start out so pure and beautiful as that presence of love. Literally, I would offer that the child is in the connected space of love, experiencing the, and it's a word so much bigger than joyful, in that space where there's just such an awesome sensation of delight and joy and aliveness and creativity, yeah, everything you could imagine that you could add to that list. And what occurs is that over a period of time, it only takes once or twice or three times from a power person, mom or dad, before the child starts to either take on the messages of the parents, the power person, if it is parents, the message of the world, and or start to make it up inside themselves that there's something wrong with them. Over a period of time, putting those ideas into the mind, those ideas coagulate, as it were, into a self-image. And the true self is replaced with the self-image. The moment at which that person disconnects, that child disconnects from the awesome active presence of love, the pain is so overwhelming. The pain of loss of that connectedness is so huge. And there is such rage at having been forced to do that, that that rage, I would offer, is the root. All future pain, turmoil, trauma, disease, suffering, and death. And as one confronts their rage and begins to forgive their rage, as that moves and lowers, oftentimes still not confronting that original rage, and I call that moment of disconnection the moment of original rage, not confronting that, but dealing with rage and, you know, that has expressed in other areas of their lives. When the rage starts to simmer down, or they get to the point where they realize that rage is not acceptable, it's not the way nice people act, even though that's what's underlying the output of the mind, then people go to resentment. And it's easy to have all kinds of resentments towards others. And that resentment, if it's not curtailed, if it's not owned and forgiven, that is, if in someone else's space, you know, let's say your spouse, your children are there, and you're modeling for your children, even if you don't say a word, that simmering under the surface, a resentment about the spouse not fulfilling what one considers to be their needs. And that resentment becomes an undertone in relationship. You know, oftentimes people have been through this three or four times, come back with such desolation and such frustration. And, you know, why does it always end up like this? It ends up like that because you won't do your work. The only reason you can end up in any position that you don't want to be in is because you don't want to do your work. You're not willing. And so that underlying resentment, if it's not owned and removed when it surfaces, what happens is it hooks into, literally, the brain's image of one's partner. Or in the presence of the person that they think they're looking at. And as long as one connects their rage to their mind's image of someone else, then that energy becomes attached to that person. And every time we're in their presence, there'll be that level of resentment. And if one is not conscious that whenever resentment comes up, whenever rage comes up, whenever repulsion comes up within someone, it is the energy of the person perceiving the repulsion, the rage, And if that isn't recognized, then it cannot be forgiven. And what will happen if one does not develop the habit of forgiving when those things come up is one will find themselves in resentment repeatedly with their partner. And if they start to simmer the resentment down, there comes a point where, you know, I've heard so many times over the years, you know what? You know, I once was in love with that person, and now I find them so repulsive. I just can't, you know, I've heard people say, you know, about their spouse, you know, I look at her, I look at him, and my stomach turns. What would cause someone's stomach to turn? An internal experience of repulsion that has been projected on a partner. Hooked into the brain image of that partner, one is repulsed by them, and you just see so many relationships that end up there. It's like they can hardly stand to look at each other. Why is that? If you have repulsion in you and you hang around in a room long enough with anybody, you know, people say, oh, I met this person, I'm so in love. But if there's repulsion in you that you refuse to deal with, if you're repulsed at the way your power person treated you, you know, every time that they gave you the look, every time they sent you the message that you weren't good enough, you couldn't do it right, and you were repulsed by that, and you start hooking that into your brain's image of your partner, then sooner or later you're going to look at the partner, you're going to say, I am repulsed by them, and of course that's denial, that's dissociation. I'm not repulsed by them, but I've hooked repulsion in my mind up to my brain's image of them. And if it's in there, sooner or later, you're going to end up feeling that way about your spouse, about the person you look at in the mirror, children. Why? Because when one's in denial of dissociation of those energies, then those energies become linked in the mind to our brain's image of that person. So the invitation when working with children is to be responsible for your own, and instead of linking it into your brain's image of your children. You know, people oftentimes look at the way parents treat children. They say, how could somebody do that to their own child? Well, it's easy. All you have to do is be in denial and dissociation and have your child bring that up for you, and it's going to be hooked into your brain's image of your child. It's just the way it is. If you don't know enough to consciously, purposely hook loving experiences, consciously, purposely think, focus on, and bring forward loving thoughts and feelings around a particular person, then sooner or later, if you're in their space long enough, everything that's less than love is going to get hooked into your brain's image of them. And you'll say, I can't stand how I feel when I'm around them. And it won't be anything to do with them, to do with what you've hooked into your brain's image of them. So our invitation is, each time you feel repulsion, you stop and you go, this is mine, rather than hooking it into your brain's image of whoever's present. Everybody benefits when we play that game, when we start to wake up to that. The parent who has repulsion in themselves, in the presence of their child or in the presence of their spouse, has work to do. Now you say, but wait a minute, Michael, you don't know what they did to cause that in me. Here's your answer. They didn't do anything to cause it in you. The reason you're experiencing it is because it's in you. The mistake is you hook it into your brain's image of them, and now you think that what you're experiencing is about them instead of about yourself. And one of the greatest gifts we can give our children, whether you're a school teacher, whether you're a teacher in church for kids, whether you're a parent, is model choosing, even though the person you're looking at isn't following all of your infantile demands, to choose to hook loving thoughts, loving feelings, consciously, purposely, stop and think about how much you cherish this person. The fact that you have this actual human being in your life that chooses to be with you, that chooses to spend time with you and care for you, and to start to hook that into your brain's image of them, and to model that for your children, that you speak words in that vein often to your children, about your children, to your children about their other parent, the people around them, and to model that for children instead of modeling the whining, the complaining, the resentment that so many people have toward parents. It is such a powerful gift to give those children. So that's my my thought for today for Parent Teacher Talk Mondays, and we're delighted that each of you is with us. Let's say hello to Dr. Tim and see how the young man be.
I'm doing well, thank you.
Oh, good. I told you this morning that I missed you, so I want to say thank you for that MP3 files on that drive. That was very appreciated, and what's exciting in your world? Anything to share with us today? Any particular thoughts about Parent Teacher Talk Monday?
Well, just that I have to echo what you were just saying. There are so many ways in which this culture, at least the one I know best, the one I was raised in, I've learned about some others, but specifically this culture trains us to blame others for whatever's going on inside of us, and it's insidious. It's so many different levels, and the more we can talk about it, invite people to question that and see it differently for themselves, the better we're going to be, because one of the things you said really resonated for me. If I'm holding an angry, sad, scared, fearful energy inside of me, and it's strong and intense, my children feel it. They may not have words for it. They may not know what they're feeling, but they're going to feel it. And if I'm not clear about it, what I'm feeling, and if I'm not able to clearly communicate to them what I'm feeling, they're going to be left to guess what Dad's feeling. And they might guess that I'm upset or I'm angry, and then because I'm not able to be clear about it myself and talk to them about it, they're most likely going to guess that maybe they did something wrong that's causing my upset, because that's how the culture is training us to talk about it. So it really pays big dividends every time I slow down, check in how I'm feeling, and take full responsibility for it. And then it starts to grow exponentially if I can communicate effectively to the people around me in a way that lets them know, I know I'm causing what's going on inside of me. So that's what I was having resonated as you were talking, and I'm glad to be here and hope there's some more questions or comments about the Parent Teacher Monday.
Well, it's I think another, as you talk about that, something comes to mind is that another gift we can give our children when we are in disturbance is, of course, to be able to language to them that we're disturbed, you know. Dad's in a state of, and be able to start to put words to what we're feeling and identify that for our children, and then model ownership of that. You know, I don't know what's going on with me right now. I'm not quite sure, but you know, I noticed that I asked you to do something and you didn't do it, and there's a part of my mind that wants to blame you because I'm in resentment. But I'm really realizing that I'm in resentment because inside of me there's resentment, and what I'm working to do, son or daughter, is I'm working to really be in a connected space of love, and I just invite you and ask you if you'll support me in doing that. And by the way, you know, maybe we could go get Mom and ask her to join us in that too, and start to model what healing conversations look like and how family comes together as community instead of avoids each other to the max. You know, you look at every little child and they want to be there with Mom and with Dad, and yet after a few years of being pushed away, you know, and oftentimes parents will, you know, I just don't know what's wrong with that kid of mine. They don't want to spend any time with me. Well, what have you modeled for them when they wanted you to spend time with them? Well, but I had important things to do. They, you know, I mean, they just wanted to sit on the floor and run that stupid car back and forth and back and forth. Excuse me? The child who was moving the car back and forth with back and forth was learning about motion and fine motor movement and gravity and eye-hand coordination. And if you could have been there to appreciate that and to be part of that, then your child would have learned that it was fun to spend time with Mom or Dad. Not that Mom or Dad was too busy or couldn't be bothered or didn't find what they were doing interesting. Because if that's what the child has modeled and that's what the child picks up, guess what? By the age of 10, they're not going to be too interested in spending time with Mom and Dad. They're going to be too busy and not interested and not concerned or understanding of what's important. So it's such a gift that we can give, and especially to be able to own what we're feeling and make it clear that it's ours instead of the child presuming, as you say, that it's their own or that they're the cause, and that we can start to come together as family and community and support each other. It's just a powerful gift to give. Such a powerful gift to give. And, you know, sometimes when we're so busy in the daily effort that it takes to raise children, it can be easy to forget those things. So I hope that's a useful reminder for everybody.
Julie,
any other thoughts on that? We've got a hand up, sweetie.
It's Julie Haverstick. So welcome to the show, Julie.
Hey, how are you, everybody?
Hey, we're good. How are you, young lady?
I'm good. We're driving, so I hope you can hear us okay.
You're loud and clear.
Well, I agree with everything you said so far. Very, very much on target. You know, that's one of the reasons why I would always have to go home and do so many worksheets, so that I could be in a space of fairness and love with the children rather than judging them and, you know, having, you know, all that negativity going on between myself and them, and then, you know, identifying with their behaviors rather than just realizing that is a behavior and we can, you know, step past that behavior. And so, you know, it's been a road of healing for me, and the children certainly resonated a lot of my issues. I just am so grateful for the worksheet and the ability to be able to shift that energy so that we could create a softer space in my classroom and a space of honoring. Yeah, I support parents in doing that. It was it's such a gift to be able to see the children empowering themselves too, and doing the same behavior. You know, when you model it, it gives them the opportunity to have something to look at and say, oh, well, we can do this. We can do it differently. And they were quick to pick up on it as I said before.
Yes, yes. Children, that old poem, children learn what they live.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, any other thoughts to add for us, or any particular question or direction your thoughts go with it being Parent-Teacher Talk Monday, having spent all the years you did bringing healing to those children as their teacher? I just applaud you every time I think about what you did with the children and how many lives you impacted in such awesomely powerful ways.
Well, thank you. I think the biggest lesson that I learned is to be aware that, you know, behavior is a cry out for support. And that a behavior is because there's a goal held. And I think it would be really great if you would talk a little bit about goals and how the children, you know, hold particular goals or have particular goals before, you know, the onset of coming into school You know, they wanted something from probably another adult, and they bring that with them to the classroom. And so I think the biggest thing for me was to learn how to deal with that, and also realize that, you know, behavior is behavior. It's not who the child really is. It's not their essence. And that if I could just keep that in proper perspective, and then I could, handle things in a different way. I could stay in the space of love. If I got lost in that behavior and then I got resonated, then, I was in a different position. So I think it's real important to be able to do your work and be able to stay in that position of more consciousness. That's what I would like to share.
Very cool. Powerful. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. Dr. Chim, any other thoughts in that regard?
Well, just in full agreement, that's one of the things that is a key in my Parenting Power Struggle Handbook, is the idea that the behavior is always separate from the child. And if I can pay attention to that, and then if I add to that the idea that every upset is a product of energies I have within me. It's not being caused by someone outside of me. That, those two things in thought, for me, end up being a 1-2 punch to knock out the resentment, the frustration, the blame that a parent might be tempted to or have been conditioned to project onto children.
There's an interesting new film out. We actually went to see it last night, had to do a lot of breathing, very powerful parent-child interaction. But it took a cycle of 45 years or so for this film to take place. It's called The Judge, if you haven't seen it. It's definitely worth seeing. Take some more cheats. Take your breathing apparatus along. Downey Jr. Plays the son, who is a hotshot big city attorney who's able to beat everybody down in the courtroom. And his mother passes away, and so he ends up going back to the small town where for 40-some years his father's been the judge. And the father is just displays such resentment toward the son and such anger. And with their three boys and the tough shell, the pained shell that the father had. And so they move through, without getting into a lot of detail, they move through just so many layers, the three young men, Robert Downey Jr. being one of them, and the father, who was played just so powerfully. Just pretty powerful film for father-son relationships and opening that space, and seeing the effect years down the road of those childhood hurts and inflictions that take place. It's pretty powerful. Good place to breathe if you're a young man.
Well,
you have any thoughts to share on the film, Jeannie?
No, it was really powerful for me too. Sat there with tears in my eyes a big part of the time and just breathing. We do have three hands up, so if we want to go to callers.
Let's go for it.
All right. I think the very first one is Mr. Rex, 517. You're on the air.
I think your mute button's on, Rex.
Not hearing you.
It sure was.
Very well, new challenge. I know that one.
It's technology. That's the fault of the technology. That's what I'd like to blame anyway.
Yeah, there you go.
But actually, it was me.
Brilliant, but we believe you.
My question, hi, everyone, is what I said. My question is regarding that moment in time when we took on the dissociated state of our awareness of being love and being one with love. And being connected to love, and some people call that the creator, some people call it God. And my question around that is, Michael, as you were describing what you were describing around the parent and how we kind of moved into, you know, that process when we dissociated our awareness, and you were talking about that, the question came to mind is that how would you describe what we do with our relationship to the Creator, to God, as we're being taught later on about God and everybody else's ideas about God? What would you say the influence of that moment in time is, and how would it unfold itself in our day-to-day lives as we grew up?
Well, my input would be that we are designed to live in relationship with love, not to live in an intellectual idea of relationship with love. And that moment in time, as opposed to a dissociated state when the child gives up the direct experience of love, and in a sense it does dissociate from that, but I think perhaps more accurately described is that we fall from awareness of ourselves as love into this mental construct of who we've come to believe we are, usually based on genetics and messages from the power person. So we lose awareness that active presence of love is there, and therefore we lose relationship with that. And we're designed to be in relationship with that. And once we fall into the mental construct of the non-being self, then the attempt is to create a mental construct of God or of love that we can be in relationship with. And it's all part of the same mistake. It's all part of the same thing. It's the stuff people create dogmas out of. And then the dogma about God becomes the block to relationship, to actual living in that relationship. And people create all kinds of beliefs in their heads, just like they create beliefs in their heads about who they are when they buy into their power person ideas, when they create the belief based on the thing of the power message of the power person, you're not good enough. You never could do it right. You always have to be controlled, and you'll never do it right. Therefore, you'll never be approved of. You'll never be good enough. You'll never be as good as your brother, your sister, whoever. When we lose awareness of ourselves as love and fall into the mental construct of the non-being self, then we try to create a mental construct that will take us back to relationship with God. Doesn't work. Never will, never has. The dogma makers take advantage of that and make up dogmas and constructs that are intellectual and in the mind about that relationship, and they have no idea what direct relationship with love looks like or feels like. And then, because their construct about themselves is based in fear, they create the same kind of construct as the Creator, and they make a belief system. And the belief system keeps them out of relationship with love. I've met people who, you know, spent 50 years in their doctrine, their dogma, and never had 1 second's relationship or experience of the direct active presence of God in their bodies until they started to breathe. And then they went back and tried to get their mental construct fix it, to get them there. It'll never get us there. What will get us there is loving truth enough to know that, I'm designed to actually live in that relationship, not to put a construct into my mind of what it's going to take to get to that relationship, to actually do it. So that would be my take.
That's awesome. It's very affirming what you were sharing, because I've done a lot of introspection and forgiveness work around this topic. Obviously, I've brought it up a few times on the program, and it has been something that's been at the forefront of my awareness. I just recently have been working with the idea of how that moment in time also directly influenced my relationship with what I perceive the Creator to be, and that's what really spurred the question today. I was having a wonderful conversation with a friend that also helped. But one of the things that I'm hearing you say in the sharing is, and what I'm just kind of putting together myself also, is if I have an idea of what I have been taught after the fact, and what I mean, let me say it differently. My ideas about what I have been taught in growing up after I blocked my awareness of love, being love, experiencing love, knowing love. After I blocked my awareness of that and I disconnected my awareness, then all of the information that I receive, if it's not coming from a space of pure love, would be how religions and how people misinterpret the information that was written in the Aramaic, that was written in scriptures, and how we also misinterpret what our parents are even telling us about God and about life and about, and will be, it seems like to me that I think what I did is I was constantly looking for something to give me a sense of what I had let go of my awareness of without realizing that that's what I was doing. My experience of going into the born-again process of actually accepting Jesus Christ as my personal Savior, I did that when I was about 11 years old, and it was profound as an experiential piece. And later on, it had a much different meaning to me. But I realized now, looking back on that experience, that it was reflective of what it was that I had originated my ideas when I let go of my awareness of what was really true. And all the things that were given to me after that were distorted by my confusion about what I had done originally. So please comment. Yeah.
When you recognize that the thing that took you out of direct relationship with the Creator in you was a mental construct, you can't use a mental construct to get back to that relationship. You've got to collapse the mental construct. You've got to be out of your mind. And then you can come back into the direct physiological experience. And if you look at the theologies, they had no clue of that. It all became this mental construct about what it was going to take. And, you know, one of the things that I usually suggest to people who get into that conversation is, before you go believing it, check it out with what the master who proved it taught and see if it actually matches what he said. Because there's so much of that mental construct that especially has come into the world of religion, it doesn't even resemble what he said. Others came along later and made those constructs up out of their own experiences. And they use that to supplant, and people accept that and believe that without ever questioning it and checking it out against the actual original. You know, it's like, go to the original, see what Yeshua had to say about it. If it isn't what Yeshua said, then you better start thinking twice about it, because if Yeshua is the answer to it, believing what followers said about Yeshua isn't the answer. It's what Yeshua said that is the answer. And it's not going to happen in the way of a mental construct. If you look at Yeshua, he's saying there's got to be an experience. You know, you look at that passage in Luke that we spoke about in the service on Sunday. This scribe stands up to teach him and says, "Teacher, what do I do to inherit eternal life?" And Yeshua says, "Well, you can patter that off. You've got that in your mind by rote. Why don't you tell me what it says?" And he says, "Okay." He says, "You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength and your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." Boom. Well, Yeshua knew. He knew exactly what the answer was that he was looking for. But the guy had the wrong question. The question wasn't the right one. And so Yeshua answers him back and he says, "You spoke the truth." And then he says to the man, "Do this and you shall live." So here's a guy who's off doing some mental construct about eternal life. Ah, well, don't make me deal with this one. Let me go after eternal life. And Yeshua takes him right back. And in essence, what he says is, "Sir, you're dead. Why are you concerned about eternal life when you don't have the active presence of love in you today. Get the active presence of love in you today, then we can maybe talk about something else. But until you have that, you're wasting your time. If you're not living, if you're living in some kind of mental construct about your relationship with the Creator, and you don't have the direct physiological experience of the presence of love in you, then you don't have a human life. If you don't have a human life, there's not much to talk about. But Yeshua says to this man who's off in la-la land about some eternal life, brings him back to earth and says, sir, in essence, you better get a life first. And that life comes from living in not a mental construct about love, but actually physiologically experiencing the active presence of love in every cell in your structure, where we're designed to live. And the technology that Yeshua brought 2,000 years ago is precisely how to do that. And when we teach our children that they are love and that they experience themselves as love and support them having time to have that experience and share that experience with them, it won't be a mental construct that they're searching for all their lives. It'll be an experience.
Beautiful, Michael. Thank you so much. And you just tied it in because that's what I was going to say. I was just waiting for you to pause, but you said it, and that so often happens, and I so appreciate that. My neighbor has a beautiful newborn baby, and we spent 3.5 hours just talking about this topic, about what a tremendous opportunity it is for both of them to keep reminding their child and seeing them as pure love and representing the best they can of pure love to that infant, to that young child. As she grows up, it's so much easier to maintain the integrity of her being love that she knows she is. So, yes, just awesome. And thank you for your clarification. I appreciate it. I know there was other callers, so I'm going to go back on mute and listen in attentively. And thank you, everyone, for all the energy you're putting into the program and all the love. Appreciate you.
Okay, thanks. You got another caller for us, sweetie?
I do. I actually have three more. They're just popping in there today. That's awesome. The next one's area code 303. You're on the air.
Yes, this is John from Colorado.
Hey there, young man. Welcome.
Thanks. I'm not that young, but thanks.
Hey, go for it.
So,
we're here for eternal life.
Cool.
So how can we support you today, John?
Well, you started out by talking about feelings of rage, and I'd like a little bit of help with my worksheet, how to fill out some of the parts near the top. I'll do this worksheet on my own, but I'd just like to get some ideas on how I can fill in some of the blanks to help me get started on it.
John, are you using the latest worksheet that's on the website?
I did. I kind of simplified it with help from Julie. She helped me kind of simplify and streamline it. That's okay.
Okay, well, how can we support you?
Yeah, I know I'm feeling rage toward my brother, so I'd like to get some help with how I can describe what my story and what my thoughts are.
Your mind is telling you that your brother is the cause of the rage from the sound of it. So what's happening that you hold that belief?
I'm blaming him for how he made me feel about myself. And when I think about how he made me feel about myself, that brings up feelings of rage.
So there are a couple of directions you could go with that worksheet. You could do a worksheet with your brother as the object of attention, number 1C.
Yeah, that's what I like to do first.
Okay, so you could do one with him as the object of attention. Of course, you started out with your own name, I, John, who am love, and feeling rage, and my brother is there. And the thought behind the rage is, to, when you're pointing it toward brother, sounds like it's that he makes me feel badly about myself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that sounds like the thought, and then if you jump through and move down to number three, your goal would be probably for him to support you in seeing the highest and best in yourself.
Okay, yep.
And then
okay.
Working through the goal, working with the canceling of the goal, that would be kind of the direction I go if I were going to do one on him. Then you could do a worksheet with yourself as the object of attention, number 1C. And so you start out with 1A, I, John, who am love, feel rage, and I'm the object of attention in there, and that is, and then the thought would be, here I am blaming my brother for how I feel.
Okay.
So that would be the thought, and then if you jump down to the goal, for self there might be I'm wanting to put responsibility in my brother's hands for what I'm doing to myself.
Okay, I get you. My goal is I want to put responsibility on my brother for what I'm doing to myself.
Yeah.
Okay.
So my goal is to pretend that the cause is outside of me, to keep it outside of me.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then work through the rest of the worksheet. And then you could do one where number 1C is rage. So I, John, who am love, feel rage, and the object of attention is my rage. And then what's the thought? So I'm going to have to sit and breathe on this one. What's the thought that causes my rage? And it sounds like the thought that causes my rage is some variation on the theme of, I'm not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound accurate?
That would be the bottom line, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then number 1, D would be, I'm not good enough. And then go down to the goal, and what would the goal be? I want to be good enough.
Yep.
I want to know that I'm good enough.
Okay.
And then work through canceling my goal, see what surface is. That should give you a couple of directions to go with that kind of a topic. Does that fit and make sense of what you're looking for support in?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, great.
Well, thanks.
You know, we are starting a 9-day codependence intensive, which looks at how we disconnect initially, and again, my take is that the root of all rage in someone's life, all pain, all trauma, all disease, is that moment when we gave up the direct knowledge and the direct experience of being love to buy into a mental construct of ourselves based on our power person dynamic. And
right.
So we're going to do a lot of work around that whole issue. If you're ready to take your work to the next level, you might want to look at the schedule and see if that's something that fits in your world to come and join us for that. It's actually here in Michigan. It's the 31st of the month, about 2 weeks.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
Cool. Awesome. Anything else we can do to support you? Does that make sense of your questions? Anything else?
That's it for now. Thank you.
Yeah, that should give me some work to do, John. Great.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for your willingness.
All right. Thank you again.
All right. Bless you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
He's the guy at work.
Talking to John in Colorado made me think of Brad in Colorado. And, Brad, if you're on, just letting you know, Michael was talking about that intensive. Our mutual friend Carrie is going to be doing the food, and I think she was going to try to get a hold of you and see if you and Cindy would be interested in coming to the intensive, because she's going to be processing the food around that. So if you're on there and listening, keep that in your hopper. So we have two more callers. The next one I think might be Mr. Farmer from Heartland. 417, you're on the air.
Yes, it is Jim Farmer here. How is everybody?
Hey, we're rocking. How about you, Jim?
Can you hear me okay? I had a hard time hearing you just then.
You're loud and clear.
Okay. Last week I had a conversation with Julie, and she was talking about the book that she wrote to teach kindergartners and first graders how to write. And in that conversation,
yes.
Can you hear me okay?
Go ahead. We got you.
Okay. And in that conversation, she was indicating that she wanted to reduce their stress. And that jumped out at me, and I thought, gee, you know, I never recognized my children as having stress. This is like a new concept for me. I mean, I experienced my children being upset. But in the context of today's conversation, it occurs to me that had I known that back then, one of the best ways to get my children back to that feeling, that state of love and connectedness to Source, would be to help them deal with that stress and help eliminate that stress. And I'd like to hear your comments on that.
Well, if you go back and you remember from Laws of Living, Jim, and it might be in the context of this conversation, it might be a good idea to watch the video, you know, maybe starting the support group if you don't have something already scheduled for tomorrow night, to work with getting the stress you need and recognize that your children having stress is a wonderful thing. If your children didn't have stress, they'd be in trouble. You and I having stress is a wonderful thing. And remember from Laws of Living, the way you create stress is by setting a goal. And that stress is designed, when you set a goal, to cause your mind to give you behavior prompts to do whatever it is it's going to take to accomplish the goal to reduce the stress. So it's a wonderful cycle. The challenge is when we give the mind more stress than it can handle, or we've got a mind that has been brainwashed with hostility and fear around any given topic, and therefore it can't give us clear guidance or direction on what to do to reduce our stress. You know, there's a great passage where Yeshua says, and you wouldn't know he was teaching stress management, but he says, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. And that word evil there in Aramaic means unripened or incomplete projects. And that you only set enough goals, if you think about the mind goal management sheet, for what you can accomplish today. And that as you manage your day, and, you know, the child, when we can give the child the tool of the tools that develop their will, and if you look in the world of psychology today, you look in the universities and in the textbooks, will is pretty much gone. It's been disappeared. And it's interesting that that concept has been disappeared pretty much, so that if people don't develop their will, which is the ability to manage their own mind, which means manage their stresses, then they're in trouble. And our culture just doesn't teach us that.
No, it sure doesn't. That's very helpful. Thank you, Michael.
Excuse me, there's a bit of a delay. Go ahead, Jim.
I say, I wish there were rewind in life. I would go back and do it a lot differently than I did 40 years ago. Anyway,
I hear
thank
that
you.
Loud and clear.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. God bless.
All right, and, you know, for parents, I think you really bring up a powerful point there, Jim. Parents can go to the website, and they can download the Mind Goal Management Sheet. And in that Mind Goal Management Sheet, we teach a person, adult or child, how to manage their stress, how to frame goals, how to set goals, when to set goals, when to cancel goals, how to cancel goals. You know, all of those are important steps in the Mind Goal Management Sheet. And, of course, in the Laws of Living course, that's the crux of it. But you want to definitely teach a child. To me, the way you design a life is to design correct stresses. And as you design correct stresses, as you teach a child to design correct stresses, then their lives will blossom under that stress. If they are not taught to design stresses correctly, but rather incorrectly, and to set goals in arenas where they're not possible to accomplish, then the child is set up for failure and overwhelm with stress. So it's a really important topic, and anybody that might want to do that. Actually, if anybody's in the Lansing area, Friday night, that's our workshop, Getting the Stress You Need. And, of course, you can go to the website and order that DVD as well.
Very good advice. The Mind Goal Management Sheet is just such a significant tool. I love it.
Yeah, imagine sitting down with your child at 3 and introducing them to that whole concept. How cool is that one?
Yeah, Julie says it very well when she says, you know, stress is the difference, and I hope I'm quoting her correctly, stress is the difference between the way you see it and the way you want it. And as parents, we have a great opportunity, a wonderful opportunity, to help our children discern the difference and work through the difference between the way they see it and the way they want it and what's really causing them to see it the way they do, which is from a place of false beliefs.
Right. And even, you know, in the arena, we want to teach the child to live in a world where they design the way they want it in a way that will support them. And, of course, the way they want it, which is a goal, is going to be different than the way they see it. And the stress is what will move them toward achieving the goal and collapsing and bringing the way they want it and the way they see it together as one. And where the problem comes in is when the child can't achieve that, that we haven't taught them to cancel the goal, so they get rid of the stress. So the stress builds and builds and builds, and then it locks in with hostility and fear, and things get crazy. But, you know, it's perfectly normal in life, you know. Right now, I'm going to get ready when we finish the radio show to go do a workshop tonight. I've got a goal at 7 o'clock to be standing in front of an audience at Unity here in Lansing, and I'm going to do the workshop Empowered to Heal. So I've got a stress, and that's a wonderful thing. The way I see it is not the way I want it. I see myself there doing a successful workshop tonight. I'm not doing that right now. So by setting that goal and there being a difference between the way I want it and the way I see it, I have a stress that now will motivate behavior. What am I going to do? Well, I'm going to get out the clothes I'm going to wear. I'm going to get some notes together. I'm going to get in the car. I'm going to know the route to get to Unity, and I'm going to be there at 7 o'clock doing a workshop. And by achieving those goals, now the way I want it, I'm there doing the workshop, is the way I see it, and my stress is gone, and I've used it constructively to achieve a result. That's the whole purpose of stress. And it's desirable to have. You know, I know that you're working on some videos, and we're looking at it and working on it from this end as well for part of the crowdfunding project. And, you know, the thing that's going to cause us to get the camera together, to set the scene up, to talk to the person who's going to do it, is there's a difference between the way they want it, we want it, and the way we see it. And that's what creates the stress to achieve those things and bring about results. It's a wonderful process. It's our best friend to have that kind of stress. And when you teach a child that stress is their best friend and how to manage it properly and how to create designer stresses that really support their human lives, got a big leg up on the rest of the world. So great questions, Jim. Thank you. And we're down to, boy, that hour went by fast. We're down to just a few seconds. So I'm going to begin to close the show out and just say we appreciate you being here. Again, a whole week of workshops here in Lansing, Michigan at Renaissance Unity. And then the Friday, the 31st of October, we'll begin a 9-day codependency, interdependence intensive right here, just, oh, an hour and a half or so from Lansing, a little town of Pinckney, Michigan. If you're ready to take your work to the next level, contact us, come and play. We've got a beautiful residential facility on a lake, and hopefully we'll still have some color on the trees. Right now, they're just amazing. And so we'd invite you to come and join us, bring a stranger to the show tomorrow, and have the best year yet of your eternal life. Awesome gift to give. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Evolving continuously.